Recordings are now started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 5, Geographic Names at Top Level Call, taking place on the 18th of April, 2018. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll calls. We have quite a few participants. Attendance will be taken by the WebEx room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now? Hearing no one, I would like to remind all to...
Carlos, if you have on phone only, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Thank you, Carlos. I have you noted. Hearing no further names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-leader, Anne Beth Lang. Please begin.
Thank you. This is Annabeth Lang, and welcome, everybody. I hope that everyone feels a little more comfortable with the WebEx now, even if I understand there is a lot of problems still. I think we all miss it over, but we have to make the most out of it. So let's hope that the raising of the hand will be a little easier this time, but we have to help each other out and try to find out who's in the queue. So the agenda has been circulated, and I will urge everyone to try to stick to the issues on the agenda while we go ahead. So before we start discussing the slides, does anybody have any items that they would wish to add to the agenda for any other business? No, I don't hear anything. And then is there any changes in the SOIs? That could be good to get in now as well. Nothing? No. Okay. Then we go start with item number two. And this, Steve, is it you that have the slides going in? So could you start it? I think we just move on to the number four, I think. Go ahead. Yes, number four. So what we are going to do now is to have in the last meeting, the work track co-leaders submitted the following proposals for consideration. So this time is the second reading, and we have been discussing two characters ASCII combinations, three character ISO 3166 codes, long and short form country and territory names deriving from ISO 3166 for many meetings now. And based on discussions both in San Juan, teleconferences, input at the spreadsheet, and through the email on list, this is as far as we get. So in the last meeting, we submitted the following proposals for consideration. The thing you see here is that we start with, for the two-character country codes, it's a little change. The two-character letter combinations country codes, the starting point is still status quo from the applicant guidebook 2012, but we are narrowing it down to geonames, since that it is what we are discussing here in Work Track 5, by reserving all two letter ASCII combinations for existing and future country codes, but two character letter digits are not geonames and are therefore outside the scope of Work Track 5. However, if two character letter digit combinations were to be recommended, in Work Track 2 considering reserved names, for example, would be subject to string similarity review. Mm-hmm. So then the three character country codes, ISO 3166, the suggestion is to maintain the status quo that is not available, and we have an addition there to defer broader questions about which entity or entities can apply for these strings and how they may be treated, for instance, as a GTLD, a CCTLD, or something else, and the same for long and short form for country and territory names. The recommendations for the three specific lists of geographic terms are some summarized as a reflection of the discussions at ICANN 61, as well as the historic discussions in different groups prior to WorkTrack 5 being established. And they state that these three specific terms of geographic-related strengths should continue to be treated in the same way for future rounds. However, recognizing the discussions that were also presented for releasing of these strengths, particularly to local authorities, there was a strong steer towards these being under a different regime than the GNSO. That was the reason why we have included the reference to referring discussions and to ensure any future work beyond the GNSO PDP capture the points raised within WorkTrack 5. And because that is the proposal, that these names are available as GTLDs, but still perhaps discussed further at a later stage. Has anyone any objection to the three points that I've gone through now that they want to bring forward at this point? And remember, this is the second reading. Thank you.
Caduce, your hand is up. It's Cheryl for the record. Please go ahead.
Yes, my hand is up. Thank you very much. I'm sorry I cannot follow. Give an example of letter digit, such as two-letter, I know. Am I right that two-letter is such as CH, Switzerland, or US, or IR? What is letter digit? Give an example of letter digit,
please.
Hello? Did you hear me?
We hear you better now, Caboose. It's Cheryl for the record. The sound is a little bit choppy, but if I can paraphrase, I think you were asking, and please do also use the chat to write your questions and clarifying questions. That also helps us understand. I think you were asking for examples of the two-letter combinations.
Yeah, two-letter, I understand, would be such as CH. Am I right?
Yes.
But what about letter digit, such as what?
That would be C1 or C7 or X3, that's Cheryl for the record. The first number being a letter character, the second being a numerical character.
Wouldn't it be possible that you put in this document, this example, in the round bracket, that the people like me, that they don't know, they have a clear idea what is two-letter, and what is letter digit. Put in the round bracket example, and also with respect to the long and short form. Before it was some example, I don't see that example now. So I would be very appreciated if you kindly put example of any of these A, B, C, D, and so on. Otherwise, I have no difficulty, but I wish to understand that. Thank you.
Hi, this is Martin. I gather Annabeth has had problems and may have dropped off the line. So, Caboose, that's fine. That's no problem to put in an example, but those that were given were useful to just explain. So thanks for that. Is there anybody else in the queue that has anything else to add or any distinct objections to raise at this stage following all of the conversations that have preceded them? If not, we can move on. Okay, I can't see any hands raised, so we'll move on to the next section, which is to continue the review of the other country and territory names. So if we can move the slide on to this one. So at our last call, And what we've just covered now again is the first three items in this list. All of this list here related to country and territory name terms that were not available in the last applicant guidebook. So what we want to continue today is to go through the remaining four items, which we started to discuss at the previous meeting. And then there are another set of terms that we'll read through, but we'll focus on these first four, and I'll just briefly explain some of the comments that we received last time and see if there is anything else to add at this stage. So if we could move to the next slide, please. Thank you. So there were, if we start with the first one here, the short or long form name association with a code that has been designated as exceptionally reserved. Some of the comments received last time that were circulated on the meeting summary notes was that there's no definitions of this in the standards. So there was a suggestion to remove this particular term from our country and territory names list. So that was one of notable entry for that. With regards to the second item, which is separable component of a country name designated on the separable country names list, I think that that one was more about understanding what terms this meant and how it was applied, but there was no distinct demand to remove this. There is, if I could just stop there for a minute, there's quite a lot of background noise, so if you could go on mute if you're not speaking, please, that would be helpful. Thank you. So if we I'll just continue through here. So there was no particular demand to change anything relevant to the separate component of a country name, the separable country name list. The third item was the permutation or transposition of any names included in items 1 to 5 in the list. And this is where it's removal of spaces, insertion of punctuation, and additional or removal of grammatical articles like the. And the transposition is considered a change in the sequence of the long or short form name, for example, Republic Czech or Island Cayman. But the transposition element does not apply to three-letter codes. So some of the comments that have been received and put into the spreadsheet in the past include elements of, you know, who is likely to apply for something like this, and the examples given, for instance, were Islands Cayman, and was it still relevant? But again, no strong indication to adjust this, essentially, at this stage. And then the last one is countries commonly, a name by which a country is commonly known as demonstrated by evidence that the country is recognized by that name by an intergovernmental or treaty organization. So example here was Holland for the Netherlands. So I think we've already captured some of the comments previously stated. What I would ask for at this stage for these four particular terms is if anybody else has anything else to add that we haven't heard before that they would like to ensure is included in consideration, so that we can add that to the list here. And I've got three in the queue now, so I've got Alexander, Cavus, and Christopher. So Alexander, please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, this is Alexander. The only names that I would like to mention is the three character or three letter permutations. That is taken out of consideration, so you could not apply for a three letter permutation of a 3166 element.
So if we read the permutation element, it says includes removal of spaces, insertion of punctuation, and additional or removal of grammatical articles like the. So when we refer to...
I'm sorry that I interrupt you. That seems to be about country names. I'm talking about three-letter codes.
And
there are no spaces and punctuation or whatever in three-letter codes.
Exactly. So so it's only the transposition element that is doesn't apply to three-letter codes, and it's therefore also irrelevant in terms of permutations, if you consider it for three-letter codes, because if you start putting spaces in...
No, I don't think so. In the 2012 applicant guidebook, you were not allowed to apply for permutation of a three-letter code, and that's still in the in this new version. It's written there in clear language. If it is a permutation of an element that is contained in 1, 2, 5, then later it says transpositions are not applying for three-letter codes, but permutations, like it's written now,
are
included.
So permutation, if you look at permutation, so what are you concerned about in terms of a three-letter code where any spaces are removed? I don't think
there are no spaces in three-letter codes.
Exactly.
It's ABC, and right now you could not apply for BCA. If you have ABC, you could not apply for BCA. That's a permutation.
No, that's just no. If you read the third item on the list here, the way that the guidebook has explained transposition is exactly what you've just said there, and
I'm sorry to interrupt you. A transposition is something different than a permutation.
So
they're two different things. I'm talking about a permutation.
Alexander, can I just ask you to go to the item 3?
I'm familiar with it.
I know. So it says a transposition is considered a change in the sequence. Permutation here is classified as something where spaces are removed.
No.
Insertion of punctuation and addition or removal of grammatical articles.
Well, there's a definition for permutations and transpositions. A transposition might be a permutation. A permutation is that you simply move an ABC. BCA would be a permutation. Whereas a transposition is you can change the letters however you want.
So I'm losing this then. So I'm just explain that one more time, Alexander.
Okay, if you have a country code ABC, let's say there would be one ABC, then a permutation would be, for example, BCA. So you move the A to the end, BCA. That's a permutation. Whereas a transposition is you can change the letters as you want. You don't have to kind of move the first one to the end.
I must admit that that's how I would typically consider permutations to be. But what I'm trying to explain is that the way that it is written in the guidebook, permutations are flagged as being defined differently to that.
Okay, so I understand.
So the language is different here. So perhaps we just need to make sure. Do those definitions still stack up? I must confess that I was surprised to read it that way originally.
In other words, I mean, the way we are writing it, it seems to refer to country names. So in country names, of course, it makes sense to remove punctuations and spaces and so on and so forth. So the second sentence, permutations include and so on and so forth, that refers also to three-letter codes. Is that right?
Well, if we could ignore permutation and transposition at the moment, and if we look at it in terms of the one that says removal of grammatical article or insertion of punctuation, that kind of wouldn't apply to a three-character code anyway.
And the transposition, as it's referred on here, is called changing the sequence. And it specifies here then that as a transposition would not apply to three-letter code.
Could we now simply say neither transposition nor permutation applies to three-letter codes, just to make it more clear?
Unless anybody has any objections to that, I think that that would be a helpful clarification on the descriptions here. So perhaps we do need to consider making that more clear. Yeah. So, well, I've got, okay, Jeff, if you're responding to that directly, please go ahead, and then I'll go to Christopher and then Caboose.
Yeah, thanks. On that one, we are saying that if you were to apply for something, it's basically that we would still include removal of spaces and insertion of punctuation and other things as not being allowed as well. So if you were applying or want, let's say your brand name is M&M&M, and you had and let's say there was a three character on that ISO list that was MMM, that wouldn't be allowed. So we can't just say that it doesn't apply at all. What we're saying basically is that if your three character string matches that you're applying for matches the three characters on that ISO list, then you cannot apply for that. That would include the removal of all. We used to call it illegal characters. They're not legal, like against the law, but some people had called those illegal characters or characters that are not allowed in ASCII. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you, Alexander. I'll move on to Christopher and then Caboose. Go ahead, please, Christopher.
Hello.
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 Please go ahead.
Yes, I'm going ahead. I'm on the phone bridge.
Yes, Christopher, we can hear you. Please go ahead. Cheryl here.
Christopher, this is Terry from staff. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Okay, I'm on the bridge because there's no sound on the WebEx screen. Martin, can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay. This may sound as a bit of a technicality, but first of all, in the drafting of this slide, I would propose to replace the word it with a definite article. It is not at all clear, actually, what it refers to. That's a question of drafting. I think I know what it's supposed to refer to because I'm familiar with the debate and the text, but anybody who looks at this from the outside would be mystified. That needs to be corrected. Regarding the first sub-paragraph, to the best of my knowledge, the exceptionally reserved names do not necessarily have short or long form names associated with them. I would just make two comments regarding .eu, which is mentioned as an example. The three-letter code, EUR, is the three-letter code for the currency, and that is definitely not available in any circumstance. And actually, I've mentioned on several occasions, and it is not does not appear in any of the GNSO texts, that the three-letter currency codes worldwide should be reserved. You cannot possibly have people applying.
Christopher, yes. Please. We have asked to go through the list. You're already deviating off as we have had this issue before, where we've already got another agenda item to attend to that. So please hold back on that until we get to that point. Thank you for your comment on the it element. I'm sure most of the attendees have been familiar with what we've been posting and
yeah,
where
I'm
it refers
looking at
back
it from
to
the point
in
of view
the
somebody
guidebook.
Completely outside the
so this isn't for external viewing at this stage. So it's not like the report. It's to help us work through in a reasonable format so that we can see things on one slide. And so
okay.
It's more of a practical purpose. But I understand
okay.
that.
For the record, I request that the DDP address the question of the three-letter currency codes.
Caruso, I've got you next. Please go ahead.
Yes. First of all, one suggestion. In all these four in the page, there is something which is neither a bullet, but it is a circle with a point inside that circle. In order to make it possible to refer to any of these in future, we should renumerate it differently, either put Roman 1, Roman 2, Roman 3, or put Arabic 1, 2, 3, 4, or put A, B, C, D, little, or capital. But this circle with one point in the inside that it is not referable. Otherwise, you have to explain. The third is not indent, is not bullet. The third circle with the point inside is this. So is it possible you change that with something which is more easily referable? This is point one. Point two, believe me, the second and the third one, the language is very awkward. The language is unclear. Maybe it's clear for some people, they wrote that, but it's not clear for all people that read that. We should not write for ourselves. We should write for everybody. So the second one is not really a good example. It is a separable component of a country name designated on the separable country name list, such as what?
Okay, Cavos, thank you. So yes. These are extracted from the guidebook. That's why we're referring to these. I understand your point, though. So that's very valid and similar to some of the earlier points there in terms of when we start to use this for external reporting, that will obviously be made much clearer, and we'll have the opportunity to amend these so that we put A, B, C, or 1, 2, 3 to help us go through.
One more comment. I fully support Alexander. Permutation is not properly mentioned here, and the transposition is also not properly. So we need to improve the language. We need to put it in more clear, understandable language. So neither the second nor the third is not clear. The first and the fourth is quite clear, but the second and third, they have difficulty, deficiency, and awkward. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. Yeah, and I think that's a familiar comment that we've had throughout our previous discussions when analysing these elements, so that will be carried through. Final check then, is there anybody on these particular four items that has anything substantive to comment on in regards to treatment, future treatment? Otherwise, we'll capture all of this and then summarise those bits to review where we are with those, and probably we'll have that considered for the next call. And I can move forward then. Christopher, is that an old hand or is it a new hand?
It's an old hand, but I've not found my way back okay. to the WebEx screen to lower my hand.
If we can move on to the next slide, then, please.
Hey, Martin, this is Steve from...
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Martin, this... I would just note that Maria Moll has noted she has a question on item two above. I guess before now.
Oh, sorry, I can't see the chat with the participant pod displayed. Hang on. Where is it? Well, if if Marisa could read it out, or this stuff, it keeps moving. Well, could somebody read out the question, please? That would be helpful, and then we can try and cover that before we move on.
This is Javier Rua for the record. So Marita says, what would happen in the case of names like Vancouver and Vancouver Island? Not countries. I know, but different places. Can't think of a country right now. That's what she said.
Well, if cities we'll be moving on to. So there's cities we'll be looking at and states. So that comes up next. So this is referring to country and territory names. We'll move on to other elements in the next slide. Is that okay? Anything else? No. Okay, let's move on to the next slide, please. So these are the other geographical terms to run through. The ones that we've just been talking about, those in the treatment of the current applicant guidebook were unavailable. So these treatments that we'll talk through in a minute will be typically referring to elements of support or non-objection from relevant governments or public authorities for the specific categories specified. So if we move on to the next slide.
Martin, this is Javier. That's another question by Marita regarding the prior topic. So she asks, Georgia, one's a country and one is a state. That's a question. So I think they're both reserved in ISO, but go ahead and comment on that, Martin, please.
Yeah. Hi. Hello. This is Marita. Can you hear me?
There she is.
Oh, sorry. I'm very sorry. I can't find the hand for it. It's crazy. I'm just using Vancouver and Vancouver Island as an example, because you used Aland and Aland Island as your example in the number two, right? They were the same thing, but supposing they were both countries. I don't understand how that number two section would work if they were both countries. Does that make any sense?
No. Not easily, but let's do back through. So the Vancouver Island element, I mean, we're talking about cities rather than countries there. So
I
that
know, but
would,
let's I would just
if we've got a if they're in the 3166 list, or the list that was referred to that expands them out. So the one that you referred to there, the the land separable components. So those are all existing in a list that's specified. So those would be unavailable.
Martin, this is Annabeth. Could I help out a little?
Please, Annabeth, go ahead.
Yeah. The list that we are referring to here, it's no countries in it, but
go ahead.
It is some territories like Åland, which is on the list. We have another example because Åland is also known as Åland, not only Åland Island. But we have a territory in Norway called Bouvet Island, .bv, Bouvet Island. But it's not called only Bouvet. So Bouvet would be free for registration, but not Bouvet Island. But that will differ if it's on the list. But in the list, it's no countries per se in the ISO list. So it's not that complicated since we have the list to go as a starting point. So I think we should not try to complicate it more than necessary since we have that list already.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Marita. Okay. Let's now just refer to the other geographic names. We'll start with a capital city name of any country or territory listed in the ISO 3166 list. So, for instance, London, Berlin. So the way that these are treated is that these would require support non-objection from relevant governments, and our regular sort of feedback on this is that it was understandable, it was predictable. There were some elements that related to sort of the implementation, the process to try and obtain relevant support or non-objections. There's still quite a lot of background noise, so if you are able to go on mute, please do so. So those were very generalized, some of the feedback items that we've had spoken about in the past. One thing I will mention at this stage as we go through, I know we've got examples of different languages on here. I would recommend at this point that we take note that we have to address languages in some form or other, but we did have some good conversations on our last call relating to languages. But because this could refer to a number of the items that we end up feeling that we need to treat in some way or other, we'll revert back to the language element, an IDN element probably in that respect, after we've isolated all the different types of categories that we want to consider treatment for. And so just to make sure that we don't need to raise the element of different languages again on this particular call, but the concept of the category type, do we have any other substantive comments beyond what we've spoken about previously on these categories? So with regards to the capital cities, does anybody have anything else that they'd like to add? And I've got Caboose in the queue. Caboose, go ahead. Is that an old hand, Caboose?
Do you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay, I'm sorry, yes. I hope I'm not the only one who have difficulty with this awkward, language of 300 years ago. It says that available, okay. But challenge mechanisms to government to initiate an objection. What does it mean? Challenge mechanism to government to raise objections. That means it is difficult for government to raise objections. There is no mechanism to raise objections. What does it mean? And then continue, applicants should be aware of that principle. Which principle? We should mention number. And then applicants must represent that the use of the proposed thing is not in violation of the national law in which the applicant is incorporated. It's quite unreasonable. It's ununderstandable. I don't know.
So, Caboose, can I just quickly respond to that? I mean, we have already gone through a lengthy process of trying to frame these to an extent that they're easy and visible to see as a quick reminder rather than the full text of everything in the applicant guidebook. So it's for the ease of us to be able to work through these. This just gives you an illustration of where the policy that was derived in 2007 ended up versus what was in the applicant guidebook. We have had a lot of comments already when we've raised discussions about these particular terms, and I've mentioned already that for cities it was considered that it was the way it was treated was practical, it was predictable. So there were a lot of advantages that were raised with regards to the way it was treated in the applicant guidebook, which I'll refer you therefore to the second item, which is as it was treated, was requiring support non-objection from relevant governments or public authorities. The other notable items that have been raised is that sometimes it is very difficult to identify and process those letters of non-objection or support. So there's some practical issues that we probably need to focus on, but it's really just to make sure in principle, do we still continue to regard this as a satisfactory way to treat this particular category of capital city names, or is there any strong objections or different alternatives that members of the work track would like to consider?
Martin, please listen to me kindly. Be patient. You are a very, very respectful person, but please kindly do not interrupt me. Allow me to express myself, even if I'm wrong. Allow me, please. Everybody, this is a liberty is of expressions, freedom of expression. Allow me to express. First of all, the language, whether it is an example or representation, it seems not too satisfying me, at least. Second, the implementation is contradicting in the 2007, because it says that requiring support, non-objections. In what way? Implicit or explicit? Objection could be implicit. You give a deadline, 30 days, 60 days, no answer, agreed. This is the problem, the real problem in JAC we had, and 42 countries, they were not happy with this sort of the actions that the answer should be explicit or should be implicit. A support should be explicit or should be implicit. And then we further from the relevant governments, suppose that there is a name and there are 10 governments. Six of them they support, four of them they oppose. What do? We go to the voting, voting to the majority, and so on and so forth. We have these things. There are many things that there are even 52 countries involved. If you go that Amazon, eight countries are there. Which one you are talking about? What this support or objections means? This is the real problem. If we don't solve here, they will have difficulty. I think it is better to have a little bit of thinking, reflection, and try to understand the matter. Thank you very much for your patience.
So Kavus, do you have any suggestions to put forward?
I have suggestions for implementation 2012, at least saying that requiring support or objection in an explicit manner.
Thank you. Okay, so I've got Paul McGrady in the queue. Please go ahead, Paul.
Thanks, Paul McGrady here for the record. So at the risk of being told that we've already talked about this, I think we probably have. I just want to confirm where we ended up. I don't necessarily want to reopen the debate. I'm happy just to be told where we are. But when we look at what the policy was here, the implementation is very different. It's not the policy. And since this is a PDP, I guess we have to decide, is the question here that we're adopting the implementation of 2012 as the new policy, or the implementation of 2012 as modified in some way to make it better as the new policy, or are we reverting back to the old policy and asking, essentially saying, okay, here's the policy, does this bit of implementation survive? And again, apologies if we've already talked about this. I suspect we have. It's just been a while since I've sort of thought through the implications of having a policy that does not line up with the implementation. Thanks.
Hi, Paul. Thanks, Paul. Good to clarify anyway, because the way that we've looked at the others already, we've had a chance to go through what options or considerations we could have for future treatment. So that's why I kind of quickly went through the earlier four items, because there was quite a lot of conversation and input, not only in the last meeting, but what we've gathered previously. This is an opportunity for the remainders that we have not had an opportunity to discuss in greater detail about future treatment. This is open for comments and input to say whether or not, you know, the treatment that was given in the applicant guidebook should be changed in any way, and in why it should be changed, and what other options that we could be considering amongst the WorkTrack 5 members. So if you have got anything that you'd like to submit here and any others that may be queuing up, please, that's what we would be looking for.
Martin, my hand is up.
Go ahead, Christopher.
Yeah. Just as an apology, WebEx has disappeared completely from my computer, so I can't actually put my hand up. This is an awful system. On Kavarusi's comment and the related discussion, first of all, the applicant guidebook was dealing with the likelihood of hundreds of geographical terms. As we move forward, I think we're potentially dealing with thousands of potential applications for geographical terms. I think we're dealing with an order of magnitude shift within the next few years, and that consequently, I think we should delete references to objections and challenges. There is no opportunity worldwide to inform the relevant local authorities and communities ex post. I think all geographical terms should be subject to prior authorization of the application. Otherwise, there will be rafts of misunderstandings and difficulties. But the constant references in this community to the applicant guidebook as some sort of Bible is inappropriate, Martin. We're dealing with a situation with orders of magnitude of change, both in terms of quality and quantity. And I don't think it's helpful either to refer to the objection process or to refer to the applicant guidebook's expectations. We're in a different world. Thank you.
Is there anybody else that, no, I've got Paul. Is that an old hand?
No, new hand.
Go ahead.
So, yeah, Paul McGrady again for the record. Sorry to take up so much airspace, but I understand what Christopher's saying, but we got to start somewhere, right? And so what I've heard over the last couple of slides are concerns about when the support or non-objection of various governments would collide. You know, what do you do in the case of, if you get support for .Georgia from the state of Georgia, but the country of Georgia doesn't want you to have it? What do you do if you get support from for a .Paris, bad example, but, and the capital of France is for you, but the Paris, Texas is against you and doesn't want you to have it? So I do think that we do have to sort of think through non-objection support in those sorts of contexts so that we can anticipate those kinds of problems, because as Christopher notes, we may end up with gobs more applicants and therefore gobs more collisions than we anticipate. But I do think we kind of have to decide what the straw man is here for us to talk about this. Is the straw man the policy of 2007, or is the straw man the implementation of 2012? And are we adding things and subtracting things from 07? Or are we adding and subtracting from 12? From my point of view, I can work with either. I just think we need to decide as a group so that we can fashion solutions around one of these two things. We need to be able to hang stuff and take stuff away from something. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. And yeah, I think what we have got is this mismatch of what is in policy versus the implementation methods for the applicant guidebook. So we do need to resolve it one way or the other, which is either take one of the items here and move it forward as the recommendation, or something else that we consider even better between WorkTrack 5 deliberations. I've got Cavus. Is that an old hand or is that a new hand?
No, it is a new hand. I think we are now concentrating on a very, very important core questions. If we don't address that, we would have difficulty. This is the area that many difficulty arises from here. Whether we need the prior authorization, whether we need a support or objections, from whom we have to ask objections. That Georgia was a good example, whether it is a county of Georgia or whether it is a state of Georgia. So these are the things that you have to really reflect, and you have to find a solution, and you have to have alternatives, options, and so on and so forth. We could not leave it as such. We could not say that support without saying that whether explicit or implicit, and we would not leave it when we're saying that concerned governments, what are those governments? If there are five governments, whether all of the five should agree, or the 12 governments, majority should agree. These are the important questions, and I request kindly to reflect on that and try to engage in some sort of very constructive discussions to see what are the alternatives to get rid of these very important difficulties and questions. Thank you.
And Jeff, I've got you next. Please go ahead.
This is Jeff, and I just want to quickly respond to anyone who's making a comment on the call about just making, I guess, assumptions that there are tons of geographic names, or that we shouldn't be using some list, or we shouldn't be using another list. Please, when you come back and try to make a suggestion of what we should be doing, and also please provide support or documentation for that. So to make an assertion, let's say that there are thousands and thousands of geographic terms, or there'll be thousands of applications for geographic terms, that kind of statement makes an assumption that something in your mind is a geographic term. And so we've been using the ISO lists, at least at this point, up until now. We've got to get on to the other categories. If you're not using the ISO list in your mind as a geographic term, then when you make a comment, please tell us what source you are considering when assuming it is a geographic term. That will help us so that we can all be on the same page when you say that something is or is not a geographic term. I think Paul's example of Georgia versus Georgia is a great example. In fact, it actually came true with one of, because at the second level, I know we're talking about top level now, but at the second level, if someone wants to use a country name, they have to get approval from the actual country. And in this case, the state of Georgia, wanted to use a second level name and was blocked by the country of Georgia that didn't want the state of Georgia to actually use it. So to join all the comments together, yes, we need to consider what happens when conflicting governments governments have different opinions. And I also agree with Cavus, who said that we have to devise procedures for that and come up with new and novel ways to handle this, because we are dealing with a public resource that has many different types of uses, and to just hold a view of you can't use it unless I say so from either side, or you have to allow it unless somebody provides a good reason. Those are the two extremes on two opposite ends, and we need to try to work together to figure out novel ways to try to resolve the situation. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. And it does speak to an original point that we were trying to drive towards as the co-leaders, which is wherever we can to identify what it is we are trying to protect and why, or safeguard and why. Now, we haven't got through the rest of the items, unfortunately, but we are keen, and we know that many of you are all keen, to move on beyond what was in the applicant guidebook. So I'm sure that we will be able to consider some homework in respect of the remaining geographic names, so that we can ask you to populate information back to us, if not already done so, into the list of comments that we've got for each of these terms already. So we can then review where we are with the conversations today, anything else that's submitted prior to our next call for the remaining geographic names. This will give us the remaining time, or majority of the remaining time, to move on to the next item. So thank you for your input.
And I'll hand over to Javier. Thanks, Javier.
Hello to all. So, agenda item 4. So, just move to the next page, please. In this topic, you know, this is the most open, you know, category so far. But I think the questions that are posted here are, as Martin said, are helpful, you know, regarding everything. So what we really want to find out in this whole process, you know, is what are the underlying interests that are under, you know, the listing of geographic names. You know, in the prior sessions, this listed names and categories in the AGB and in ISO, but there's other potential geographic names that are in no lists or that we haven't spoken about. So I guess the floor is open, and maybe to people that haven't spoken yet, that we could briefly have a more open conversation regarding these questions that are posted here. So what are the underlying interests in adding to the list of geographic names? What are the specific additional groupings of geographic terms that should be under consideration for differential treatment? Why do they require protection? What types of protection do you envision? So does anybody out there in the phone bridge that hasn't spoken perhaps might have a stab at this on their ideas just to have, you know, varying points in the community? Anybody? Anybody on the queue?
Yes. Sorry, Javier, I'm on the phone line and it takes a long time to react. Carlos Gutierrez for the record. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Javier. And I just want to make a comparison the way you did it. I mean, we have been talking about political geography so far, and I feel compelled to talk about users, internet users, and the possibility that they have to identify themselves as groups living in a geography independently of the political aspect that we have discussed enough. And I think that in this process of opening the DNS space and this segmentation that has taken place in the first round, there is a fair argument to be made that some communities that are very close to certain language, history, etc., also get an opportunity and don't get bungled down by the political geography discussion. Thank you very much.
Carlos, could you give examples of what you mean? Or does
yes,
anybody
I,
want to?
Okay. Yes. I don't want to go into Catalonia because it's politically very hot, but I have two examples from Europe. One, the first one is Brittany, that also got his three-letter code, ETH, or Latin America, who got Lat, or Serbia, who decided to prefer a three-letter code, and also some other derivations like the adjectives Norwegian and Swiss. Those are, for me, fair differentiations that some people can choose, some countries can choose, some communities can choose. Thank you very much.
Interesting, Carlos. Anybody want to reply to Carlos on this topic? Anybody have a
question?
Yes.
Possible to, is it okay to be next in the queue?
Okay, who is this?
It's Liz Williams speaking.
Just go ahead. Go ahead.
Thank you, Javier. I would like to just raise a couple of points about additional categories. The first is a level of principle about whether we need to be tying ourselves in knots about additional categories when perhaps the other way of going around it is to make sure that we have explicit guidelines for applicants and that we can apply those guidelines and policy and implementation to any potential application for any kind of geographic term, because frankly what we're looking at here is a crystal ball, and I'd love that crystal ball to be full of exactly as Carlos says, new ideas and new ways of thinking about things that will not be captured in a no from the very beginning. It will be captured in a yes, apply, make your case, and if everything is correct in your application, then do go ahead. The other, and Greg Shattan and I were discussing that on the list the other day, and Greg's point about the, and Greg can speak for himself, I think he's on the call now, but I think I'd like to reiterate the point that he made, where ongoing and never-ending lists of things and categories of things tends not to be A, practical, or B, acceptable for a broader ICANN implementation perspective. And then the element around underlying interests, I've been speaking quite clearly on being this being the opportunity to enable, for example, I'll use an Australian case, Aboriginal communities that speak languages that may wish to sell their art in Australia, and they may work to sell their art nationally. They actually don't know perhaps that these opportunities exist, and one of the elements of responsibility we've got is to make sure that the Kununurra or Kimberley or in my hometown, our local Aboriginal groups have the opportunity to apply for geographic terms that are relevant to them and that don't require them to hit hurdles of impossibility before they even get their ideas off the ground. Those hurdles are expensive to deal with. Quite often they're subjective, and quite often they lead to enormous frustration and the sapping of an applicant's financial resources to actually do what they would like to do. And I'd like to focus exactly as Carlos says on end users and new potential users of the domain name system that we haven't even thought about yet.
Hi, this is Greg Shatton. I'd like to get in the queue.
Go ahead, Greg. It seems like Javier has fallen out.
Okay. This is Greg Shatton for the record. And thanks, Liz, for bringing that up. That's a good segue into what I was going to say. Taking another step back, and having been at this for a while, not as long as some, but longer than others, one of the things that I kind of learned early and repeatedly in setting domain name policy is that reserve names and blocking lists and taking things out of circulation and putting things in a box is generally strongly disfavored. The idea is that domain names are supposed to be available, except for very, very, very good reasons when they are not. Name collisions being one of those, NIC type second level names is another example. Example, maybe another example. Somewhat to the chagrin of the intellectual property community, the idea of never-ending block lists hasn't been adopted within ICANN policy. There are other ways perhaps to skin that cat, within ICANN policy, that is pretty much a non-starter. There have been obviously some very limited efforts, say with regard to the Red Cross names, but again, I view that as swimming upstream against a very strong disinclination to make a decision without an applicant or potential registrant in hand, that to whom is the right or the primacy going to go? To my mind, generally speaking, it should start, as Liz says, with giving an applicant a path to success and not giving a non-applicant blocking rights. So I think, you know, overall, when we talk about adding to lists, if those lists are going to be used for reservation purposes, then there should be a general disinclination to add to those lists or add to the types of lists. We can talk about, you know, what to do when there may be more than one type of party that has similar claims to a name. But again, by and large, where there are multiple legitimate rights, to my mind, you know, as a general rule, the tie, if you will, should be awarded to that person with the application in hand. And that's the way it works between multiple trademark owners. United can't stop United if one United files for it. The other company's trademark rights, you know, are not relevant as long as if they both have rights. Similarly here, without getting into issues of hierarchies of rights, I think overall we need to favor the delegation of top-level domains. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you for your comments. Can anybody remind me of the queue? I think Caboose is on, but is anybody before Caboose?
Yes. I'm sorry, I cannot share the opinion of Greg. He is looking for total deregulation, total unlimited freedom. They can use whatever they want. They don't respect any regulation. They don't respect any dignity. They don't respect any associations with any countries or any nations and so on and so forth. I cannot share that view. We cannot step back and so on and so forth. We were in a good suggestion saying that what do you ask the support or objection or prior authorization, but now he's looking for something totally putting everything out there, saying that you can use whatever you want. You don't need any rules. No rules at all.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Caboose.
Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I heard Greg, and he has a liberal view, but I don't think he was saying that he doesn't respect countries. But he does have a liberal view, and our job here is to get everybody out. I think,
I did not say any of those things. That's a mischaracterization of what I said. I was talking about policy preferences, and I think what I was stating is a reasonable liberal view. It certainly, if I had said any of the things that Caboose said, that would be a very interesting world. It's not a world I live in. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Caboose. I think we have Irio on the queue. Irio, please go ahead.
Yeah, this is Irio Lansipuro. Thank you. I think that we are now entering an area which is not sort of black and white, and it is also an area when we talk about non-political geographic names and terms where countries different enormously from each other. In some countries and in some cultures, there are non-political geographic terms that are enormously important for the people, for the users. And in there are countries there where people couldn't care less. So that I have no recipe for how this could be done. But anyway, an ideal approach would be would try to take into account these differences between the
questions
and countries. Thank you.
Thank you, Irio. Yes, and we're trying to do that. And thank you for your comment. In this topic, concepts that have been mentioned before are concepts like rivers, mountains, plains. What other concepts would anybody give a stab of other concepts that could be spoken under this item here? Anybody want to comment on Irio's comments or anybody else's comments?
Excuse me, I raised two questions. No answer was given. I asked a question, what do you mean by additional categories of geographic names, such as what? And grouping, such as what? How you group? We need to give some examples.
Yes, Caboose, thank you, Caboose. What in this slide, we're referring to categories or geographical names or geographical indications that are not included in the AGB or in ISO 3166, but that have, you know, that have different interests, and that's why we ask what are the underlying interests that should be discussed. So this is an open category in many ways, and we're trying to get input from the whole community, from you, Caboose, from Greg, from everybody, Carlos, everybody out there, and with very fair points on different sides of the spectrum, but in, you know, in view of moving this conversation along to do creative and innovative things. I think in this category that we're discussing right now, it's a great chance to innovate without so much association to existing lists and that type of discussion. Anybody else that can have a comment here, please? Anybody in the queue?
If you have a queue, I'd like to be in it. Please, I've put my hand up.
Go ahead, please. Who is this?
It's Liz Williams speaking.
Liz, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to answer that specific question, Javier, and I wanted to give a couple of examples of Australian rivers. So very big rivers that flow through many states and are of great importance to us from an agricultural perspective. We can have Murray, Darling, Clarence, Brisbane. All of those are geographic terms because they relate to one of our many river systems we have. And they would fit into this category. And the other side of that, of course, is its family names. So all of those names relate to former governors or ordinary people that have the same name of Murray or Darling or Clarence. And I think that we're going to find that applications for these kinds of geographic terms, which are generic but also related to place names, is going to cause us a lot of anxiety, and I would like us perhaps to think about this a bit more broadly to, first of all, address your underlying interest question and then work out some kind of way of having generic words, which are geographic terms in some context that could also be terms that are used in many, many different countries. And Australia has not been, in many cases, very imaginative how it names its places. We use Perth and Brisbane and Sydney and many other of our geographic terms, which are exactly the same as terms in England or Scotland or Wales, just because of the way in which our history has fallen. So if we were to think more clearly about what we could expect in terms of applications for generic words that also have a geographic implication, I think we might be able to come up with a basket of opportunity that is treated objectively in terms of analysis from an applicant's point of view, but also might have some additional wrinkles that we would see in implementation, which is why I said that in the chat that perhaps the 2007 policy is insufficient because we've moved forward, and certainly the 2012 implementation is insufficient because it doesn't address these name collisions, intention collisions, that will come up in a new round of applications. I'm happy to do more work around this, but I think we do need to spend a bit more time and not rush over it, because it's clear that is of concern to many different kinds of, A, geographic terms, and B, different kinds of applicants. Thank you. Thank you, Javier.
Thank you, Liz, for your thoughtful comments. I think Paul McGrady is in the queue. Paul, go ahead.
Thanks. Paul McGrady here. So I think we've got a missing question. So I see questions one and two, but I think we should also be asking, why might additional categories of geographic names beyond those in the applicant guidebook not be needed? What are the underlying interests in not adding to the list of geographic names? I think that's an important part of this discussion, and I don't want our questions to presuppose an outcome. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you. So we're going to take the people that are in the queue, and who do we have? I think we have Bruce and Susan in that order. Bruce, please.
Do you see my hand, please?
I saw it. Go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah, if it comes to my turn, please give me the floor. I wait until you allow me to speak. Yeah, okay. I'm waiting for your green light.
You're breaking up. Caruso.
Can I talk?
Sorry, I couldn't hear you either.
Go ahead. Sorry, the geographic and generic are mutually exclusive. I don't understand. What do you mean by generic geographic name? Could you kindly, the distinguished lady, give an example of generic geographic? They are not coherent with each other. They are mutually exclusive. Geographic associated to a place. Generic is not associated to a place. So I don't understand what you mean geographic, generic geographic. And I don't know what you mean grouping. Yeah. Could you give an example, please?
Could I give an example to Caruso, if you wouldn't mind?
Go ahead, Liz. It's Cheryl here.
Thank you, Cheryl. I also answered your question about hands in the WebEx. Caruso, I gave a couple of examples of Australian examples, and I'm sure there are many in other countries around the world, that the word related to our river systems in Australia are named after people, and many people have the same names. They're also generic terms. They don't mean anything explicit, but they also take on a geographic meaning when they're related to the river or the mountain or the village or the cultural icon. So I'm not playing a semantic game here. I'm trying to work through examples that you can identify generic words, and Jeff has given some in the chat as well, that can also be applied to a geographic name. And I think that one bucket, one treatment, one way of dealing with it is not going to be dealt with in terms of establishing a list. But we have to recognize that many geographic terms have become geographic terms because they've been named after certain people, and those names apply to many, many different people. I'm happy to take that offline for you to step through how that relates to this particular question.
Yeah, please communicate with me in the email. I don't understand. This concept could not be translated in practical terms. I don't. It's just concept. You have not given any example. I'm very sorry. Unless I misunderstood you, and I apologize for that.
This is Annabeth speaking. It seems like Javier has fallen out. So, Susan, Anthony, you have your hand up.
Thank you very much. I do agree with Caruso. I understand what he is saying, that geographic name or geographic term has not been defined. That's really what we're here about to address. And I was also listening very carefully to, I believe it was Liz Williams, who just spoke about the geographic meaning when related to a river or a mountain. And I was caught by the speaker's words of when related to. So I think the issue for me has always been an applicant could propose a new GTLD, and that new GTLD could correspond in appearance to a word or phrase that has geographic significance, geographic meaning. But the applicant does not intend to use, as stated in the applicant's papers, does not intend to use that GTLD in any way to refer to the corresponding geographic name or term or reference. In other words, if you had a GTLD that incorporated the name of a river in Australia, But in fact, when you examine the applicant's application, you discover that the applicant has no intention to use the GTLD in any way that is related to the river, I would say then that takes it off the table for further consideration. That was what I wanted to say. Thank you.
This is Annabeth again, for the record. Thank you, Susan. I think that is a good way to see it. It's about the same thing that we discussed with cities, used for a city or not. So this is a discussion worth following up, but now we have to stop the discussion now and go to the last point on the agenda. So we have a slide about the meeting schedule and how often we should have the meetings. And it has been suggested to get through this to have an the current schedule is alternate Wednesdays for 90 minutes at 5 UTC, 14 UTC, and 20 UTC. But it has been suggested to come through all the things that we are discussing to meet weekly on Wednesday, but just for 60 minutes with the same time slot rotation. So we would like to have your comments on that, either here or in the chat or in the email exchange afterwards. Is there any immediate reflections on that? I don't hear anything.
Yes. Yes, my hand is up.
Good, Kavos, come on.
Yes, thank you very much. If you ask for immediate reaction, I am in favor of the current situation every other Wednesday for 90 minutes, but not every week. Because sometimes we are in the middle of discussions and we are at a minute of 58, and it's to be interrupted. It is better at least to have the opportunity to continue the discussions until we have somewhere to continue that at the next meeting. So I'm in favor of the current situation. Same time frame, except if you can change the $2,200. If not, same time frame, but every other Wednesday for 90 minutes, but not every week for 60 minutes. Thank you. Because we have other obligations. We have other commitments.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kavos. I think we should take, as it is suggested here, to take the discussion to the mail list, so then we can see what people prefer. So, Javier, have you disappeared in your... What happened with your sound? No, I don't hear you. And Martin, are you still there?
I'm still here.
You're still here. Okay. So we're nearing the end of this meeting today. I think that it's time to just say we quit here, and that we would like to have as much comment on the email list as possible for the open category and continue the discussion there. So anyone has something to add now?
Yes, I have something to add, if you allow me. Instead of going to the email reflections, is it possible to have a doodle with respect to what you proposed?
I'm sure we can do that.
Easy.
Emily and Steve.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a good way, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for that suggestion. Any more comments here? No? All right. I think we then end it for tonight. And thanks, everyone. Bye for now. And thank you for the good discussions. And we talk again in 2 weeks. And then we'll see how we continue with the meetings afterwards. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Annabeth. Bye, all.
Bye, all.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Operator Chris, if you could please stop all recordings. To everyone else, please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.